Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
Because people know that that's the most vulnerable place for people. Everybody loves their kids more than they love themselves or anything else in the world. And so by threatening you'll never see your kids again, it's a way to really get at where people are the most vulnerable. It's their Achilles heel.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two divorce attorney girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve family law matters peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert Scott Picard at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
And now, we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free. Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is you'll never see your kids again. The real story about sole custody. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. So I cannot count the number of clients who've told me when they come to me in the beginning of their divorce action that their spouse has threatened to take the kids away from them. You know, those words, you'll never see your kids again, are very powerful and they're very scary. And they invoke a lot of fear and anger, and they immediately will, you know, raise the emotional level of that divorce to be a high conflict one, you know, really quickly. But in reality, does one parent have the ability to take the kids away from the other parent? I think that this is one of the most misunderstood issues in family law. And this issue of sole custody is what we're going to unpack today for you so that you have a better understanding in case your spouse tells you you're never going to see your kids again. So Rebecca, in your practice over the years, have you run into these cases where you've heard this threat?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's so often, as you said, that because people know that that's the most vulnerable place for people. Everybody loves their kids more than they love themselves or anything else in the world. And so by threatening you'll never see your kids again, it's a way to really get at where people are the most vulnerable. It's their Achilles heel. But as soon as I say that, I mean, as soon as people say that to me in an initial consultation, I'm always like, okay, well, that's not going to happen. Right. You could just relax, start to breathe again. Because in 99% of the cases, it's almost impossible to get sole custody. But, you know, we are going to talk about more of that today. I mean, there are certainly times where I've seen sole custody, but it doesn't last forever, which we're going to talk more about here. I mean, there's usually a plan that has to be created. But the cases where I've actually seen sole custody are very, very extreme. Somebody has a substance abuse problem that's pretty serious, and the children are just really going to be at danger. Maybe one parent has abandoned the family in some way or something. Or maybe, you know, one parent has agreed to it. Maybe one parent's incarcerated or something like that. But it's really pretty rare.
Yeah, I honestly, you just don't see it very often. I'm thinking for our listeners, maybe let's start at the beginning and help our listeners understand, you know, what the legal meaning of that word custody is, because that's actually a really misunderstood word.
Yeah, and I just want to also kind of mention that there are some states that don't even use the term custody anymore when it comes to shared parenting. you know, they'll still use custody in the term of sole. But when it comes to shared parenting, sometimes it's not even used anymore.
No, you know, and I think they've come to the realization that even using that word back in the days when I first started practicing, even you had that situation where one parent would have physical custody and the other parent would get visitation with their children. And just the terms alone marginalized the parent who didn't have custody. So yes, I in shared situations, you hardly ever even see the word custody used, or you see it used as joint. But taking that a step back, I think what many people don't understand until they're in a divorce with children situation is that there are actually two different types of custody in the legal sense. There's legal custody and there's physical custody, if we're going to use those old-fashioned terms. Legal custody refers to the decision-making ability of the parents to make those major decisions regarding their children's upbringing and what's in their children's best interest. So that's things like their education, their health, their welfare. And, you know, those are things that go right to the core of parenting. And generally, legal custody is a joint situation where the parents have equal say. But then there's...
Yeah, I mean, almost always, every once in a while, you'll see that one person maybe that they have to discuss and agree upon and consult with each other and all that sort of thing. But then sometimes they give ultimate decision-making authority on a particular area to one parent or the other. Maybe it's education, maybe it's healthcare or something like that. But most of the time, it's both parents get equal say.
Yeah, and I actually, most states, every state that I've practiced in, has a statute that presumes that joint legal custody is actually in the best interests of the children. So you have to have some reason why one of the parents shouldn't be allowed to make those decisions before a judge is going to order sole legal custody. But there's also physical custody, again, using that rather archaic term, but it really comes down to where are the children residing? Where are they laying their head at night?
And sometimes that's just like a parenting plan. Sometimes that's just called a parenting plan. You know, where are they on Monday? Where are they on Tuesday?
Yeah. And even, you know, even that old language that I referenced where one parent had primary custody or whatever you wanted to call it, and the other parent had visitation, regardless of whether there's a physical custodian of the children or that term is used, the other parent almost invariably has the right to also see their children. And, you know, that's what's incorporated into that parenting plan or shared physical custody. Everybody thinks they walk in the door and they're like, I want 50-50 custody. I mean, I'm sure you've heard that, Rebecca. It is like the holy grail of parenting time. I want 50-50, as if, you know, the children could be cut in half.
It's not always very practical.
It's almost never practical.
Sure. Yeah, but you know, here's the thing. I've heard judges actually say things like, tell me why I shouldn't order 50-50 custody, which to me is an error because the judge is now presuming 50-50, like it's a presumption. Tell me why I shouldn't do this. So I have seen that because the shift, ever since the statutes around the country started removing all language that made one parent seem more important than the other, like the terms custody or visitation, which is a really old-time word, because why are parents visiting their
with
children
their own
or
children.
Kids visiting their parents?
Yeah.
You know, ever since that started happening, probably 10 years ago or so, there's been a huge shift. That languaging has shifted the way courts see custody and parenting plans now, and they are really more and more seeing both parents as equal.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I think there, when it comes to the parenting time for parents, practicality comes into the issue quite often as to when are parents actually available to be parents. You know, I had a case I mediated recently where the father went out on an oil rig for 3 weeks at a time and then was back for 1 week. Well, he physically was not available to be, you know, to have the children residing with him for 3 weeks at a time. So just by reason of that, the kids were with their mom, but then they were with him for the full week when he came back. So, you know, that case kind of took care of itself, where you have cases where both mom and dad are available. There are a lot of different options, right, with respect to sharing where the children live. People do things like, some people alternate weeks, some people do what we call a 5-2-2 schedule, where the children are, say, on Monday and Tuesday of every week with one parent, Wednesday and Thursday of with the other parent, and then alternating Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that comes out to be 2 days, 2 days, and then 5 days with the other parent. That's a very popular plan. People do nesting. People do that situation where the children actually stay in one home and mom and dad move in and out on some sort of schedule. But that can be pretty wearing. I've only ever seen that be successful maybe during the pendency of the divorce action, as the children are starting to get used to the new normal. It has a lot of problems.
Yeah, it's terrible for the kids. I think it's terrible for the kids. You know,
well, it's not so great for mom and dad either, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, but sometimes the parents are like, oh, you had 12 hours, I get 12 hours. You had 12 hours and 5 minutes, I want 12 hours and 5 minutes. You had the extra 30 seconds. You know, so it becomes a tug of war about winning, and that's definitely not the best for the kids. But there's been a lot in the news lately about custody issues with Brad and Angelina, because, you know, she was accusing him of being an unfit parent. She was withholding time sharing. The judge was then turning around and saying, hey, you better let him see the kids or I'm going to take your time sharing, Angelina. And now the judge has ordered a custody evaluation. And so, you know, a neutral custody evaluator usually helps get to that, the bottom of that. But, you know, it's really a pretty extreme cases. I know if you, Susan, could you talk to our listeners a little bit about what it takes to obtain sole custody?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing for people to understand is, especially when it comes to legal custody. So now we're talking about the ability to make those major decisions about your children's life. So the presumption is that should be both of you making those decisions, that legal custody should be joint. So if you think that for some reason your co-parent should not have that decision-making, the burden of proving that they are what I'll call an unfit parent, that's the term that gets thrown out, is entirely on you. You have to go into court and rebut the legal presumption that joint legal custody is in your children's best interests. And this is not an easy thing to do. I have clients all the time who come in and say, well, he or she cheated on me. They broke up our family. They violated the contract of marriage. Obviously, they are a bad person and they should not have custody of our children. And they're utterly shocked to hear that just because somebody is a bad spouse, a bad partner to you, does not make them a bad parent. The things that make someone, and that is very upsetting. You know, I've had clients walk through the door saying, I want the kids. He can't see them or she can't see them. She cheated on me. Of course she can't see them.
Doesn't that make him or her morally unfit? Because
morally unfit, yes.
You know, no, I mean, it really comes down to, are the children going to be harmed in some way? And no, if you, you know, cheating is not one of those things.
No, I think you actually referenced the situations where you do see this. I usually tell clients that it's, you know, it's for one or two of two reasons. Either it's an organic reason why that parent can't participate as a co-parent. And that's things like I think you referenced earlier, Rebecca, like somebody is an alcoholic or has a severe drug problem that literally, you know, either takes them out of the picture. I had a case with a mom who was just so sadly mired in an addiction to alcohol that her kids would come home from school and find her completely unconscious on the couch and she wouldn't wake up for hours. You know, it was a situation where she just wasn't there because she was lost in her addiction.
I had one similar where the wife had an addiction to drugs and she went to the son's Little League game and was sitting on the grass hallucinating that and telling people that she was taking shards of glass out of her eye and she was, you know, saying all kinds of crazy things in front of all the other kids at the baseball game and the other parents, which I'm sure must have been awful for the children, but and very sad for her. And you know, obviously that those situations that we just were talking about, the person is just not fit to care for the children. But, you know, I want to make sure that I mention that people do have a constitutionally protected right, and they have an inherent right to be parents to their children. And that's not just moms. That's also dads. Both parents have a right to be parents to their children unless they're proven that that right should be stripped from them in some way. And even if it is, it's never forever unless their rights are terminated. You know, there's usually going to be some sort of a plan in place for reunification. Okay, you're going to go to therapy. You're going to go to rehab. You're going to, you know, you're not going to show up drunk to the supervised timesharing. They're still probably going to get supervised timesharing, like an hour a week or something. I mean,
right?
They're still going to be able to see their kids.
Well, and that's, you know, that is the ultimate thing with parenting is that you do see in these organic reasons. The other organic reason that I always point out to clients is when somebody has a mental health issue. I had a client who was a schizophrenic and he just couldn't participate in parenting. He was not always on his meds. He was not always controlled. And he did present when he was not a danger to his children. But addiction, alcoholism, these things, mental health issues, they can be addressed. And if the parent is willing to address them, applies themselves to addressing that issue, they are going to be reunified with their children. The court will do it and set orders usually that tries to handle that in a responsible way, usually starting with supervised visits. And then if that goes well, maybe extending the visits, having them more often. But the whole goal is always with supervision or with the court's oversight, making sure that the child's time with that parent that was incapable is expanded as that parent does address their issues.
Yeah.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com. Also make sure to download your free meditation at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free-meditation. Coming up, more from Susan and Rebecca on You'll Never See Your Kids Again, the real story of sole custody.
But and we should make sure that we touch on, you know, what it really takes to get sole custody as far as custody evaluations or proving out a sole custody case with a judge, because you're going to end up doing this in front of a judge, because unless the other side is willing to sign over full custody to you, it will be a trial. It's going to be a battle in court, which will be protracted, long, expensive, awful, and you will not end up better friends on the other side.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including from chaos to clarity, using meditation and mindfulness to deal with transitions with renowned meditation and energy healing expert, Scott Picard.
He contacted me and I said, well, here's the thing. And he was devastated. And I was like, I told him, I said, you can use this to become all of who you were meant to be as a man. And I will help you walk through the fear, first of all, the pain, the anger, everything you need to walk through. And I swear to you, if you do that, you're going to become more whole.
And now we return to today's show.
But I want to be sure we talk about the other type of cases where sole custody are awarded, because these are actually the ones that are truly the most difficult. These are the custody battles that you and I fight out in court. And these are the ones where the mom and dad just are so, just their emotional state with each other is so bad that they cannot work together in their children's best interests. They are so toxic that they cannot co-parent. And in those instances, the court has no choice, but somebody has to make decisions for the kids. And if mom and dad can't do it together, the court has to appoint one of them to do it. And that's usually picking the least bad choice. I mean, it's not a great situation.
They usually end up with what we call like a parallel parenting plan, meaning that they never interact with each other. You know, the kids, it's, you know, usually like a Monday to a Monday or something, and the exchange happens at school, and so the parents never have to interact or have a conversation with each other, which is very sad, very sad.
Yeah, it's sad because that child now is living in two entirely separate households that, you know, one, because often part of the problem here is the parents have very different parenting styles. So they may have one household that they live in with one parent that's one way, very loosey-goosey, and we do homework if we feel like it and go to bed whenever you want and eat Fruit Loops for dinner. And then the other household might be, you know, a very different, you know, much more structured or something like that. But that child then bounces back and forth between those two households. So it's an extreme measure to do that, the parallel parenting.
Yeah. And by the way, that's a very good point, because I've had some people come in and say, well, he shouldn't have any custody because one time he was laying on the sofa watching TV and the baby started playing in the plant. And so therefore, it's obvious that he would never watch him. And so I should have sole custody. You know, things like that. Because the thing we need to make sure we say is that the judges hear this he said, she said stuff all day long. And they have no patience for, you know, well, he's a terrible parent because blah, blah, blah. Or she's a terrible parent because, you know, whatever it is, because she has a new boyfriend. You know, all those kinds of things are not going to be enough. Not going to be enough.
No, I hope we're getting that point across, that these are extreme cases where there is really a risk to the child or children.
By the way, I have been always the primary caregiver. That's not a good argument either. No. He's never given him a bath. She's never gone to the school, you know, things like that. The judges' positions are usually, well, they can start.
Yeah, I've actually heard that more times than I can count. Well, they're going to learn how, or they'll change a diaper, or, you know, everybody can learn to be a parent.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't know how to administer his ADHD medication. Okay, well, I'm sure he can figure out how to measure out the dose and give it to the child. I mean, those are the arguments that start to make one parent sound like they just want to withhold time sharing from the other parent, and that doesn't fly.
No, it actually, you can't control what happens in the other parent's household. That is a hard thing for many parents to grasp and understand and accept. We've had this conversation with clients many, many times, though, where we have to say to them, your time with your children is your time, and your ex does not have a right to look over your shoulder and critique what you're serving for dinner, or, you know, whether you're, you know, properly supervising the homework. You know, but you don't have that right in their household as well.
Like you said, Fruit Loops 3 meals a day. Yeah. Oh, well.
Disney dad or, you know, Magic Mountain mom. I mean, those are their households.
And, you know, I can tell you from my own personal experience, that was difficult for me because I got divorced at a very young age. I had 3 kids, you know, young. And my ex was much more lax than I was. And, it really did not sit well with me and the types of people that my ex wanted to hang out with and bring around my kids. I did not like, but I really had nothing to say about it, and there was nothing I could do about it. So, yeah, well, you know, so when I tell clients this, I understand. I really do understand. It's awful. It's hard. It's very hard.
Oh, it is. And you know, the most difficult thing to accept is when there's a new significant other in your ex's life, and all of a sudden that this new person is interacting with your children on a pretty continual and extensive basis. And it's hard to accept that you don't have a right to tell your ex who they can date and who their new significant other can be around the children. Yeah. Unless they are truly going to be a harm. I always say, you know, if they are a drug addict or they are a felon or a known child molester or something of that nature, maybe there's something that you can do about it. But if you just don't like your ex's new girlfriend or boyfriend, that's not going to be sufficient.
No. And we should make sure that we touch on, you know, what it really takes to get sole custody as far as custody evaluations or proving out a sole custody case with a judge, because you're going to end up doing this in front of a judge, because unless the other side is willing to sign over full custody to you, it will be a trial. It's going to be a battle in court, which will be protracted, long, expensive, awful, and you will not end up better friends on the other side. That's
no,
for
your
sure.
Any co-parenting ability that you did have, sadly, will likely be gone at the end of the process.
Yeah, because it's just going to be a whole, you know, mud-slinging fest. And sometimes people hire professional mudslingers in the form of custody evaluators who are psychologists, who are trained to do evaluations. And usually they're appointed by the court as a neutral. That's the way you want it to be, because now both sides are court ordered to talk to this person. Because if you try to bring in somebody who didn't talk to the other side and only spoke to you, it's not like
it's not that helpful, right?
No.
But those psych evaluations don't get done in 10 minutes. Those take 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
They have to talk to both of the parents. They're probably going to talk to your children. So just think about that, because now your children are talking to a stranger who is, you know, obviously they're mental health professionals, but they're going to be asking them questions about your parenting. And these are third parties. The thing that I always emphasize for clients is during this time period, you have to understand your entire life goes under a microscope the whole time the litigation is pending. So you've got these mental health professionals who are scrutinizing everything that you do, everything
oh, yeah.
that your spouse
and,
says
and
that you're doing.
They even can do psychological evaluations on you. Parenting evaluate, like your propensity for how good of a parent you may be, intelligence testing. They can do.
They're going to talk to your friends, your family. they can talk to anyone pretty much they feel they need to talk to get a clear picture.
They can even get access to your medical records sometimes. I've seen courts order that that's allowed because
they think it's relevant.
Because best interests of the child is in question. Yep. So they can do all types of testing. They can come into your home. They can look, you know, to
They will. They will come into your home.
Yeah. They will look at exchanges. You know, how do the children react when they are coming back to mommy or going to daddy from one parent to the other? What's happening there? Is the child upset? Are they going easily between? What's happening between the parents? Are there dirty looks? All that ends up in a report, a very lengthy report that gets sent to the judge.
Yeah, it's now all written down in black and white. And reality is no one ever comes out looking like an angel 100% in a psych evaluation or a family evaluation. I have never, ever, ever seen one where both parents didn't have some behaviors, because you're under a great deal of stress at this time and it goes on for a very long period of time. There's always going to be something where your behavior does not reflect well upon you. And it's going to be in that report.
Yeah. And the report will give a recommendation for a parenting plan. The judge has the discretion to take every single word or throw the entire report in the trash can or take what parts he or she wants. Yeah. And it's very, very expensive. Even if they're court appointed, it doesn't mean the court pays for it. It's the parties still pay. And then what happens usually is that it comes out better for one side than the other. One person is okay with the report. The other person is not. And so the person who's not then turns around and hires another expert to refute what came out in the report from the first expert. So it really can be extremely tedious and very expensive.
Custody battles are the most expensive trials almost always. Because that's not the end of the people who might get involved. The court can also appoint a guardian ad litem for the children. That's another professional who's appointed to make determinations in their estimation as to what's in the children's best interests. They get paid. And in many cases, the court will appoint an attorney or attorneys for the minor children, depending on whether their interests are aligned or different. So now you have a whole slew of new attorneys who need to be paid.
Right. And maybe a parenting coordinator to help, you know, implement the parenting plan. So cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching is what happens with that. And, this is all the stuff you do if you have an evaluator. If you don't have an evaluator, then basically all that stuff, all that information that's gathered by an evaluator would now have to be somehow presented to the judge directly. So, you know, and judges don't have weeks at a time in their dockets to, you know, have each side parade in 50 different people to testify. That's the other thing that people don't realize. They'll come to me and they'll say, oh, I have 10 people who are going to testify that I'm so, you know, what a wonderful parent and all that sort of thing. Well, the reality is that on the day of trial, you know, by the time you do opening statement, closing arguments, lunches, arguments over whether evidence gets to come in or not, you know, you might get a good 6 hours of trial out of the day. And each party testifying is at least 3 hours. And then there's cross-examination. And so, you know, if you get 2 to 3 days of trial, that's pretty long. Most judges don't have patience to sit through days and days and days of family law trials.
They don't. And you know, if you don't finish in your allotted time, yes, you can probably come back, but it won't be on the next day. It's going to be the next time that judge has an opening in their docket. And, you know, the courts that I've practiced in, the family courts, are very overburdened. There's a lot more family law cases than there are judges and available times for judges to hear them. So things are docketed out. In Connecticut, where I was, things could get docketed out a year before you were going to get your trial date. And you didn't get on the trial docket until you had gone through months and months of pre-litigation. And then someone would make a guesstimate of how many days you'd need, but you weren't getting more than three or four. And if you needed more, you had to come back, and that could be months down the road. So that only drags your whole case out longer and takes it longer. So, you know, in the end, thankfully, the court battles over sole custody of children are really rare. I mean, they are a small percentage. I just read a study that said it's really like 1-2% of all family law cases. And in divorce cases or family law cases, 95% of parents come to an agreement on how they're going to parent their children after they break up or divorce. And many of those agreements call for joint legal and physical custody with some sort of a parenting plan, like Rebecca and I have talked about. You know, many times these days, it's sort of a growing trend, I think, that many parents are choosing to work through the issues around their divorce and work on their parenting plan completely outside of a courtroom, which is a positive in trying to maintain that co-parenting relationship. Many people are working with mediators to arrive at a plan, you know, that helps them restructure their family in everyone's best interest. So the opposite of what Rebecca said earlier, where you go to court and usually one person's happier than the other person in the end, someone feels they won, someone lost. In a mediation setting, the parents can sit down and work something out that they actually think works well for both of them, and more importantly, what works best for their children.
Yeah,
with some help and with some guidance.
And parents can be much more creative and, you know, unstructured and flexible about it. I mean, like, they can come up with anything they want, whereas judges are really just bound by the statutes. And so, and what exactly they hear as far as evidence, because they're like worried about things being overturned on appeal. And so they're not going to go outside the box. But if you use a mediator, you can go outside the box. So in keeping with that theme, Susan and I are thrilled to announce that we have formed the very first Mindful Mediation Family Law Centers in the country called Breaking Free Mediation. And you can find out more about that at breakingfreemediation.com.
As a special gift, I did want to mention to our listeners that we have a free meditation to help you relieve the stress and tension that you often feel during the divorce process. And you can download that at breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free-meditation.
Yes. So just remember that although your ex may have not been a good partner to you, and you maybe don't like that person, it doesn't make them a bad parent. So think about that before you throw out those words, "You'll never see your children again." Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert, Scott Picard, at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free-meditation.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you liked in a review on iTunes.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.